Support for Access Utah comes from the Utah Humanities Council, enriching cultural, intellectual, and civic life by providing opportunities for all Utahns to explore life's most engaging questions and the wonders of the human experience.
Support for legislative coverage comes from USU's Department of History, committed to providing the knowledge necessary for informed decision-making by citizens of Utah, the United States, and the world, and supporting UPR's coverage of the Utah Legislature. Online at usu.edu/history.
Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. Thanks for joining me today. Air quality is our topic for the entire hour. We're focusing in general on air quality, but in specific on Senate Bill 21. This is sponsored by Senator Margaret Dayton, Republican of Orem. And the bill would overhaul the state boards that regulate air, water, and radioactive waste. The bill would reduce the membership of all five of the environmental boards, would shift many of the board's responsibilities to staff at the Department of Environmental Quality. Representatives from the Utah Manufacturers Association and Utah Mining Association pushed for this bill. It now has passed the Senate, moves to the House. And in the second half of the program, we'll have on with us representatives from those organizations, Tom Bingham, president of the Utah Manufacturers Association, and Jim Holtkamp, an attorney who's on the board of the Utah Mining Association and was instrumental in writing that bill. They'll tell us why this is necessary. First half of the program will have opponents to the bill. They say this may damage air quality. And later in this half of the program, we'll have on with us Matt Pacenza, policy director for Heal Utah, and Charisse Udell, founder of Utah Moms for Clean Air. But we begin with my recorded conversation from yesterday with Dr. Brian Mensch, president of Physicians for a Healthy Environment. We're talking with Dr. Brian Mensch, who is the president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. And specifically, we're looking at Senate Bill 21. I believe there's another bill as well, Senate Bill 11, which would affect potentially regulation of clean air. We're talking broadly as well about the environment and clean air. Dr. Mensch, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for taking time to be with us again. Give us, in brief, your reaction to these two bills, specifically Senate Bill 21, and then I want to take a little broader to broader issues of air quality.
Well, we're very concerned about these bills, and I think any discussion about the bills needs to be to first start with setting the backdrop for the problem that we currently face with our air pollution. And that comes from many different groups, such as the American Lung Association, which almost every single year consistently ranks the urbanized areas of the Wasatch Front as in the top 10 worst cities in the country for acute spikes in air pollution. About a year ago, Forbes magazine, which is hardly an environmentalist icon, ranked Salt Lake City as the ninth most toxic city in the country, and it was primarily because of the emissions from Rio Tinto Kennecott. Our business leaders, by and large, specifically the Salt Lake Chamber of Commerce, has finally recognized that this, and admitted publicly, that this is becoming even a serious economic liability in that it suppresses the in-migration of people who might bring us cleaner industry. It suppresses real estate values. It significantly affects the quality of life. So it's getting the appropriate attention. So with all this as the backdrop, to have the legislature work basically at the behest of a very small section of the Salt Lake Chamber of Commerce, the Utah Mining and Manufacturing Association, to work at their behest to make it basically easier for industry to pollute even more, to us is unthinkable. It's inexcusable. We would consider it unethical and, if not, immoral. So I don't know how much more vigorously we could oppose this, but we definitely oppose it, and it's exactly the wrong thing to do given the current situation that we're in.
Now, the supporters of these bills seem to be selling this as minor tweaks. I suppose you disagree.
Well, they're not minor tweaks because they basically make seats that were held by physicians and environmental organizations optional. And by optional, obviously they mean that they really don't intend to have them on those citizen boards. I mean, that's why they did it. So there were several different kinds of justifications for this. The thing that we heard most often was that the boards were too large and, quote, unwieldy, and they needed greater commitment from the citizens on those boards, and they needed more expertise. Well, I find that last critique fascinating because these boards are basically designed and mandated to protect public health, especially the Air Quality Board. That's their primary function. So the perpetrators of the bill want to enhance the expertise of these boards, and the way they want to do it is to eliminate the very people who have the most expertise to offer with regard to public health protection. So it's totally disingenuous. It was a deliberate gesture on their part to punish the environmental community and those that are advocating for public health protection. And they succeeded. And we're going to make a concerted effort to try and get the governor to veto it, especially in view of the fact that a couple of weeks ago he launched what he was trying to sell as a serious campaign to clean up our air pollution. They've got a nice name for it called UCARE. Well, here's a perfect opportunity for him to declare if he's really serious about it by vetoing this Senate Bill 21. So we're going to launch a vigorous campaign to try and persuade him to do that. And if he doesn't, we'll probably take this case to the EPA, because this is just the latest of a number of issues that we have with how the state manages the regulatory process for industry permits. So this will just add frosting on the cake, if you will, and if we can't get any redress for this locally or at the state level, we'll go to the EPA.
Last time we did a program here on Access Utah on air quality, had a comment from a listener after the program who thought it might be helpful to the discussion to, though we all know in general, deleterious health effects of bad air quality, to detail some of that from the point of view of a physician.
We know so much more now than what we did 10 years ago about what air pollution does to public health, that our understanding of it really almost compels us to take a completely different look at air pollution than what we did back then. And if you want to try and get a general understanding of it, air pollution behaves much the same way that, physiologically anyway, that cigarette smoke does, in that it causes a low-grade systemic arterial inflammation that affects the blood supply to virtually every organ. So this new message, if you will, is that air pollution really affects the entire body, and it affects primarily the organs that have either the most vulnerable blood supply or the greatest metabolic rate, and those are just happen to be your most important organs, your heart, your lungs, your brain, and in the case of a pregnant woman, the placenta. Three new studies were published just last week that got an awful lot of attention from the media, although they just add to literally hundreds of others. But these new studies showed that the air pollution that residents along the Wasatch Front typically breathe every year, chronically exposed to that much air pollution, causes cognitive decline of over 2 years. So, in other words, from what I just was describing, air pollution not only affects the lungs, it affects the heart and the brain. And this particular study showed it actually accelerates cognitive decline in elderly women. Other studies show that it actually is associated with poorer intelligence on the part of children. One of these other three studies published last week show that strokes increase dramatically even with very short-term spikes in air pollution, less than 24 hours. In fact, the greatest spike occurred in as short a period of time as 12 hours. And if the spike is only, quote, a modest spike, like what we call a yellow alert day, air pollution less than 12 hours in duration at yellow alert levels increases stroke rates 34%. And then this third study last week shows that heart attack rates increased significantly, literally within a couple of days after air pollution episodes. Now, these studies are not really unique. We've had studies like this published for several years now, but these studies got a lot of attention because they are in very prominent medical journals done by very well-respected teams. But they certainly add to a mounting body of medical research that indicates we have to take a much different look at what air pollution does to public health than what we have done historically.
And the effects, do we have studies showing long-term effects, long-term?
Oh, absolutely. I'll give you a couple of examples. We know that air pollution exposure actually shortens a person's lifespan. And the amount of air pollution we breathe here along the Wasatch Front, it's probably, again, about 2 years. We know that air pollution causes a low-grade constriction of the arteries, which increases blood pressure. And for all the reasons that people know they shouldn't have high blood pressure, well, we know now that they also shouldn't be exposed to air pollution because it elevates blood pressure. And, for example, specifically, studies have shown that chronic exposure to air pollution causes a gradual narrowing of the arteries throughout the body, equivalent to several years' worth of an acceleration of the aging process. So here we have other studies that show our brain deteriorates more quickly. We live shorter lives because of our exposure to air pollution. We know that it curtails and inhibits, and in the case of children, stunts lung development. For example, if a child grows up with the kind of air pollution here along the Wasatch Front, we know that their lung function will be permanently inhibited or stunted. They'll never reach their full lung adult growth size that they should have. Well, that has significant ramifications not only for longevity, but also for exercise tolerance. We know that super athletes have worse cardiovascular fitness if they live with and perform in circumstances of air pollution, typical of what we experience. So in many different respects, these are just a few examples, we know that air pollution actually harms everyone. It isn't just the people who feel like they have trouble breathing or they have irritation of the eyes or coughing. It harms everyone, even if people don't realize it, even if they don't have symptoms. It's having a silent effect on everybody's health. So it's something that everybody should realize is a serious issue, no matter how healthy they think they are. And we haven't really had a chance to talk about what it does to, say, the development of the human embryo and the lifelong chronic disease propensity that air pollution's effect on the embryo has. So that may be time for another discussion, but all of these studies clearly indicate that we should take this much more seriously than we do, and to have the legislature pass a bill that will make it even harder for us to clean up our air to us is just unforgivable.
Finally, in the general area of air quality, what one or two things would be at the top of your list that if we could change that's what you would put at the top of the list, either government or lifestyle changes, or what would you put the top one
or
two things?
We need to do a lot of different things, but because at least half, if not a little more than half, of our air pollution comes from vehicles, we need to take a first look at that. And in fact, there's a disproportionate amount of air pollution that comes from a small number of those vehicles, especially diesel engines and especially older cars. So we need to figure out every way we can to reduce diesel emissions. And that means we should provide tax incentives for companies that use diesel engines in their trucks or whatever other vehicles they use. We need to electrify truck stops so semis don't have to idle for long periods of time. We need to get our UTA fleet and our school buses converted to natural gas or at least retrofitted to capture a lot of these diesel emissions. Kennecott is a big player here because they have an enormous fleet of very large diesel engines and a major contributor to the problem. Probably after that, the next thing is that we need to start making a serious commitment to public funding of mass transit so people have realistic options to not using their cars. We spend so much more money on roads and highway construction that if we cut that in half and committed it to mass transit, that would start to really make a difference. We don't seem to be headed in that direction. Last time we had any communication with UDOT, they were planning on spending $600 million to increase the section of I-80 from the mouth of Parley's Canyon to the top of Summit County by one lane. $600 million could do tremendous things for our mass transit system here in the valley, and to have the idea that that's where we should be spending $600 million is to increase the freeway along I-80 by one lane, when it's never congested already. To us, that's a perfect example of the fact that our priorities are misplaced. And the way we spend our state funds is an indication of our priorities. And if we really want to start cleaning up our air, we need to start committing serious money to allowing people realistic opportunities to not get in their cars every time they want to go somewhere.
We'll leave it there. We have much more in this hour about air quality, and I'm sure we'll be talking with Dr. Mensch again about this topic. Dr. Brian Mensch, president of Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Mensch, of course, is president of the group Utah Physicians for a Healthy Environment. Much more on this topic is coming up. We're going to be focusing on air quality, but other areas of concern include, of course, radioactive waste and water. Several of the boards, five of those, which regulate these areas of our environment, would be changed under Senate Bill 21. Representatives from the Utah Mining Association and Utah Manufacturers Association say that these are necessary. We'll get the reasons from representatives of those organizations, Jim Holtkamp and Tom Bingham, in the second half of the program. And coming up following a brief break, we'll get more from opponents of SB 21, Cherise Udell, founder of Utah Moms for Clean Air, and Matt Pacenza, policy director for Heal Utah. That's coming right up.
Support for legislative coverage comes from USU's Department of Political Science, committed to improving the community, the state, the nation, and beyond, and supporting UPR's coverage of the Utah legislature. Information is at politicalscience.usu.edu.
We're glad you're listening to Access Utah today. Air quality is the topic. And as I mentioned, boards that regulate air quality and water and radioactive waste would be changed under Senate Bill 21, which has passed the Senate, moves to the House. And we're talking on this part of the program with opponents of that bill. We have proponents coming up in about 15 or 20 minutes. We welcome in now Cherise Udell, who's founder and president of Utah Moms for Clean Air. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Appreciate you taking time to be with us today. And we have with us Matt Pacenza, policy director for Heal Utah. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Let's start with you, Mr. Pacenza. Your understanding of Senate Bill 21 and what this would do to those regulatory boards that I mentioned.
Yeah, well, basically in a variety of ways, it narrows both the scope and the composition of the board. So the boards have shrunk in terms of the number of people that'll be on them, I believe, from 11 to 9. And then sort of what they do is also being narrowed. They would now play no role in the process of listening to appeals of permits. And there's a few other things as well. And overall, we just sort of see this as an industry-driven effort to essentially make sure that these boards, which frankly have hardly been in a champion of environmental issues, but which have occasionally shown a little bit of independence and occasionally have shown a little bit of a willingness to sort of, you know, at least raise their hand and ask some questions about whether a certain practice is safe or not. What's quite clear is industry, you know, couldn't tolerate that degree of sort of feistiness. And so they are going to go ahead and make sure that these boards are you know, both just more under their control and have less responsibilities that might impact what they do.
So if the boards haven't been that much of a champion of air quality, water quality in the past, is this just more symbolic? You see this as a symbolic problem?
You know, I think that our attitude about it is that we think they always do have the potential to act, you know, in a more positive manner. And if our governors were more willing to appoint truly independent folks to those boards, the potential is there for the boards to do more. And we do have, in the arena that Heal Utah is most familiar with, radiation control, we've had some really positive developments in the past. We've had them stand up and establish policy statements on certain key issues, whether it be foreign waste or depleted uranium or the issue of right now, blended nuclear waste. They have sort of taken a stance and said that they were opposed to certain practices that Energy Solutions was interested in doing. But with that said, they have never actually, when it comes to a permit and actually applying for permission to do something, they haven't actually, you know, sort of blocked anything like that. So, as I sort of put it, it's, you know, there have been the occasional flashes of independence. We're grateful for those. We'd love to see more. But if Governor Herbert does sign SB 21, we fear that, you know, that will essentially be impossible.
Senator Romero's amendment, I believe, was added to the bill, which would mandate a member from an environmental group on each of those boards. Does that help?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's it could help. I think that the problem we've seen over time is that that language is fairly easy to interpret, whoever the person who's appointing wants to interpret it. So the boards over time have had folks that are considered to be environmental attorneys, but that ends up meaning that they're an attorney who represents industry that works in the environmental arena. And I think specifically when it comes to composition, the point of concern is less about the environmental group or not, but more about the independent physicians, that at least several of the boards now would no longer have to have a doctor on them. And that seems fairly disturbing, given that they're making judgments about public health every day.
I want to broaden this out to air quality and environmental quality, and there's an email we got, a comment on our website. I'd like to run this past each of you here. This is from Nathan Florence. Thanks for that email, Nathan. He says, I've talked with Brian about this, referring, I assume, to Dr. Mensch, and he's brought it up before. Let's stop calling this stuff haze and call it what it is, smog. We have a smog problem. Words are powerful. Let's use the right ones. Keep up the great works, moms and doctors. I don't know if either one of you would like to tackle that one.
Well, thank you, Nathan. do you want to go first, Matt?
No, go ahead, Therese.
Words are very powerful. Everyone knows that smog is a negative. I think you have sort of a visceral response to the word smog. And we don't have that same visceral response to haze. So Utah Monster Clean Air and the physicians have urged the local weather reporters to use the word smog when appropriate. And as you see, they are doing that more so, and we really do appreciate it.
And let me follow up with Charisse Udell. You just heard from her, founder of Utah Moms for Clean Air. I wonder if you tell us in brief how you founded your group.
In a very quick nutshell, actually, Dr. Brian Mensch had an op-ed in the paper about 5 years ago after really, really nasty pea soup inversion. And in that op-ed, he said breathing air on a red air day was virtually the equivalent to smoking a half a pack of cigarettes. And my baby was playing on the floor with some blocks, and I had this flash image of a cigarette dangling out of her mouth, and I was so mortified as a mother that I thought, oh, I've got to do something about this. And I thought, well, who's my demographic? Who do I know here? And it was really moms. I was like, well, how about Utah Moms for Clean Air? And so I called my husband on the phone and said, do you think I should organize moms to clean up the air? And he's like, sure, that sounds great, honey. I've got to go. I have a meeting. And that was 5 years ago.
And what success have you had?
We've actually had extraordinary success, thanks in large part to the collaborations we have with other groups. So we're just an additional voice being added to the conversation, but a very powerful voice, because no one questions the intentions of mothers, right? I mean, we are advocates for our children first and foremost. And in doing so, we've been able to help defeat two power plants, which are actually key points to why this Senate Bill 21 has been put forth. But we helped defeat the Delta power plant and the one in Sigurd. And We've also helped alter the Mountain View corridor. They were going to do a big mega lane highway right adjacent to 21 schools, and they would have virtually created a cancer corridor. And according to epidemiological statistics, a certain number of children at those 21 schools would have gotten childhood leukemia, and then a number of those children would have died. And so knowing that we actually altered that road and made those schools much safer through our advocacy is to us a huge victory, knowing that we've saved children. We don't know which ones would have had the scarlet letter on their heads. But, statistically, there would have been a number of kids that would die from that project. So we're very proud of that. We've also helped pass Senate Bill 106, which was, I guess, about 4 years ago, that in the end allocated about $2 million to clean up all the stinky, polluting diesel school buses in Utah. So those are a few of our accomplishments. So we've really kicked some good, clean air butt in this state, so to speak.
Let me just follow up. You think that the defeat of those power plants is what prompted this action, Senate Bill 21?
Well, actually, it was the Utah Manufacturing Association that admitted that. And that's when I had my aha moment. Oh, that's why they're doing this bill. Because when this bill came out, I was like, why are they doing this? You know, who's contacted Senator Dayton? What's the initiative behind this? And interestingly enough, the Utah Manufacturing Association, their spokesperson admitted, I think it's quoted in the Tribune or the Deseret News, that he used as an example that the Delta power plant and the Sigurd power plant, those projects were shelved, and he argued that they were good examples of why the boards need to be revamped. And he said because the process was too cumbersome and too slow. And the reality is, what this is retaliation for citizen participation and citizens rising up and speaking out and actually having a little bit of say in the process. And so what they're trying to do, Senator Dayton, along with the Utah Mining Association, along with the Utah Manufacturing Association, they are trying to neuter citizen participation. And that is exactly what this bill is about, and they have outright admitted it.
By the way, we'll get perspective of those two organizations in the second half of the program. That's coming up. Let me turn to Matt Pacenza again. What you'll hear from, I'm guessing what we'll hear from in the second half of the program, Utah Manufacturers, Utah Mining, is that no one's going to come out and say, well, we want bad air. But the argument you hear is we need a balance between the air quality, environmental quality, and jobs. And jobs are very important, and if the restrictions are too stringent, we'll lose jobs.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a really false argument. And I think that, if the environmental movement has failed, it's that we failed to really articulate the clear and overwhelming benefits of the environmental safeguards we already have in place. And, it's kind of amazing to look back and realize that, we used to burn lead in gasoline until someone realized that, spewing vast quantities of lead into the air was probably not a great idea. And, if you look at just the incredible achievements of the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act, by the way, I believe both of which were signed under a Republican president, and then the Clean Air Act amendments of the early 90s, which again, by the way, were signed by a Republican president, that they have had these overwhelming, extraordinary health benefits. And we are all living longer. Our children are safer. Our children are smarter. Our pregnant moms are less likely to have problems. And we just have this sort of extraordinary record in this country over the last, 30, 40 years of instituting a series of safeguards that have made a tremendous difference. And I think one of the second way I'd answer that question is that there's beginning to be a really articulate, smart, forward-thinking segment of the business community, led by companies like eBay and by others in the recreation industry, some of the ski makers and so on, which are basically raising their hands and saying, we're the ones who are actually creating new jobs in Utah. We're the ones who are actually building new facilities and siting new plants and moving here. And we're doing it because it's this beautiful place. It's affordable. We have access to the most amazing natural beauty on earth. And they're demanding that they live in a place which remains, those things, and which is cleaner and where the air isn't so nasty on so many days of the year. And so I think, unfortunately, we have a sort of, 20th century attitude toward our natural environment and toward business, which is articulated by, certain, fossilized segments of the business community. And they should get out there and meet the new guys and the new women who are leading us toward tomorrow. And unfortunately, they just want to, drag it down. And I think that that's just, Utah's going to fall further and further behind the rest of the country, because the rest of the country is realizing that to attract business, you embrace a new way of thinking, you embrace clean energy, you embrace the environment, and you don't see it as a threat.
If you just joined us, we're talking about air quality, focusing generally on that, specifically on Senate Bill 21, which has passed the Senate, heads to the House now, which would reorganize boards which regulate air and water and radioactive waste, throw more of that work to the staff of the Department of Environmental Quality. Industry representatives say this is needed, and we're hearing in this half hour from groups which oppose this bill and say that an already somewhat weak regulatory structure will be weakened further. If you'd like to join this conversation, we'd love to have you either in this half of the program or in the next half, when we'll have representatives on from Utah Mining Association and Utah Manufacturers Association. The number is 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495, or you can get an email through to us at upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. Let me turn back to Charisse Udell from Moms for Clean Air. Some people are moved to action, like yourself, mm-hmm. and others who have joined you. You've cited some successes that you have had. I don't know whether you would agree with me that maybe the majority of people maybe have this on their radar, but aren't doing a whole lot about this. I wonder what you would say to those people, what about the urgency of the problem. We've heard some fairly scary statistics from Dr. Mench earlier in the program. That kind of comes and goes. We read that. We hear about it. But a lot of people aren't moved to action. What would you say to those people?
Volunteer-based definitely ebbs and flows. You know, people work with us for a year, and then they get pregnant and have a baby and have to sort of pull back. So I totally understand all the competing issues that we have and all the competition for our time. The great thing, though, is as citizens, just even sending simple emails to your representatives makes a huge difference. So I think people are always really shocked to realize that if your elected official gets 6 to 10 emails on a topic, that is considered a huge amount of public, outcry on an issue, which is ridiculous that it only takes 6 to 10. But I think the average citizen thinks that, they need to receive thousands or hundreds of thousands of emails for them to listen. And the reality is it's only like 6 to 10. So if, 6 to 10 listeners on this show were to mobilize, and just when we call out for people to send off emails about certain bills or about certain issues or to the governor, that they just spend the 2 minutes doing so. And then also taking actions in their own lives. For example, making more efforts to carpool, making more efforts to walk to school, walk to church, turning in that gas-powered lawnmower and doing it with an electric lawnmower, or by the old-fashioned way, the way Grandpa did it, with a good old human energy. So I think it is very difficult to keep people focused on the air quality issue. With the exception that when we are having inversions, people are throwing up their arms and they are really frustrated and they are really upset. And fortunately or unfortunately, we get that reminder every year. So in that sense, the air quality issue stays in the forefront of people's minds much easier than some other issues, just because I always call the dirty air an equal opportunity issue. It doesn't matter what race you are, what religion you are, what your socioeconomic status is. We all have to breathe out of the same airshed. So in that sense, and also the fact that our legislators up at the Capitol are meeting during sort of inversion season, they too kind of can't ignore the problem because it's right outside their windows. So that's kind of both sides of the issue as far as keeping public perception keyed in.
And we're just about out of time. Matt Pacenza, just very quickly, if someone's interested in Senate Bill 21 or any other piece of legislation that they feel is going to affect them, what would you tell them to do?
Sure, I would just check in with a whole range of organizations that, you know, keep a watchdog effort up there. I mean, Heal Utah, we've got healutah.org. You can check that out. The Sierra Club does a good job, League of Women Voters. You know, certainly Brian and Sharice's organizations have terrific, you know, email lists and all of that. So I think that, you know, those of us in the nonprofit community do the best we can to keep a close eye and to alert people as to what's going on. So go to our various websites, you know, plug
and
your email
Facebook.
Address.
Facebook is a great place to find out what's happening really quickly and to get involved really quickly.
Okay. Thank you very much. We're out of time for this. Yes, go ahead.
Can I add just one more thing?
Yes.
I think this is a really great analogy, but what the Utah Manufacturing Association and Utah Mining Association, along with Senator Dayton, are trying to do with these boards, actually sort of an interesting analogy, I think, is that it's they're trying to turn the boards into, for example, having, you know, 8 smokers on a board and 1 non-smoker, and then trying to decide the smoking policies in our neighborhoods. And do you think that the smoking laws will get tighter or looser when it's 8-1?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's what's happening on these boards, and that's why we are opposed to it.
Very good. We'll leave it there. We've been talking with Sharice Udell, who's founder and president of Utah Moms for Clean Air. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Matt Pagenza, policy director for Heal Utah, has joined us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Earlier in this half hour, we heard from Dr. Brian Mench, president of Utah Physicians for Healthy Environment. Following a commentary, we're going to get a different perspective on this issue. Proponents of Senate Bill 21, Tom Bingham from Utah Manufacturers Association and Jim Holtkamp from the Utah Mining Association. That's coming up following the break.
Storyteller Gina Wickwar.
I love much about these modern times. Emails, Twitter, texting, being able to find just about anything, if not the exact truth, on Wikipedia or by Googling or Binging. But there is much I miss about the old days, old-fashioned connections and interactions. First of all, I practically weep when I get a handwritten letter. My husband has elderly cousins in England, and instead of generating the usual Christmas letter printout each year, they send us cramped, untidy, handwritten sheets filled with all manner of things, such as how their gardens did last summer, what the weather was like on Guy Fawkes Day, what the new baby birds first flew, and how labor's policy has been killing them. It's like reading the first draft of a Jane Austen novel. And on the rare occasion when my mailman actually comes to the door with an especially large package, I practically hug him. Most of my life, the mail person came up on the porch because that's where the mailbox was, and I was pretty likely to see him or her and exchange a few pleasantries. Nowadays, the letterbox is mostly out on the street, and making eye contact with a person who walks through sleet and snow and dark of night is getting pretty rare. Ditto the paper boy. We used to groan when, once a month, the paper boy would inevitably ring the doorbell just as our family was sitting down to dinner. This was followed by a mad scramble, searching through trouser pockets and handbags to come up with the $6.50 in cash, no checks, ma'am, that was owed. By the time the deal was closed, your pork chops were cold. Still, we all knew the young media entrepreneur personally and enjoyed watching him grow up and turn over his beat to a younger sibling. Now, of course, the newspaper's subscription office sends you an annual bill. No more eye-to-eye with that plucky youngster, which is sad because now you don't even know whom to send that Christmas bonus to. Occasionally, I love thumbing through a volume or two of our encyclopedia set. Granted, ours doesn't even have an entry for the first Gulf War, but there is still something satisfying about reading information from the pages of a musty, dusty old tome. Now, however, you can get the OED online and read Tolstoy on your Kindle. No smelling the dust or dog-earing the pages, which is unfortunate because thumbing through a real book lets you learn a lot. I remember looking up the Great Depression in the encyclopedia for a high school term paper, but found Alexander the Great far more fascinating than the 29 stock market crisis. It's just like the dictionary, another soon-to-be-obsolete workhorse. With a dictionary, it's not just the word you're looking up that matters. It's all those words in between that you stop to read on your way to finding Zizova. Don't get me wrong. I do love our ability today to connect to information quickly and easily. I'm delighted to find maps on Google and little-known facts on Wikipedia. But I miss handwritten letters, talking to postmen and paperboys, and sitting down with a real book in my hands. That's why I'm taking my dictionary and a good book to the grave with me, along with a box of stationery and a pen. Google, emails, Kindle, Wikipedia, as great as they are, they won't work there. They're just too modern. This is Gina Wickwar.
Support for Access Utah comes from Crumb Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now open Monday through Saturday until 2, offering a changing menu of a specialty salad, French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits, and lunch sandwiches.
Support for coverage of the Utah Legislature comes from the USU Charter Credit Union, serving members with 24 local ATMs and more than 28,000 ATM access points across Utah and the U.S. through the Credit Union Co-op Network. Information is at usucu.org.
Thanks for being with us for Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking about air quality and specifically Senate Bill 21 on the program today. This is a bill sponsored by Senator Margaret Dayton, Republican of Orem, which would add a representative from an environmental group to each of these boards. That was an amendment. Basically, what it would do is overhaul the state boards that oversee clean air, water, and radioactive waste. Reduce slightly the membership of the boards, shift many of the board's responsibilities to staff at the Department of Environmental Quality. And we heard in the first part of the program from opponents of Senate Bill 21, who say that an already weak environmental atmosphere is weaker still with passage, or would be with passage, of Senate Bill 21. As I mentioned, that has passed Senate, now moves to the House. We bring on a different perspective today, proponents of the bill, this part of the program. Tom Bingham is president of the Utah Manufacturers Association. Mr. Bingham, welcome to the program. There we go. Welcome to the program.
Okay.
And Jim Holtkamp, who is an attorney. He's on the board of Utah Mining Association. Jim Holtkamp, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the program.
Pleasure to be here.
Let me start with you, Mr. Holtkamp. I understand that you helped in the drafting of this bill. Tell us, from your view, what this bill would do.
Yes, this bill primarily does two things. One is, as you said, it shrinks slightly the size of these five boards: air quality, water quality, safe drinking water, radiation control, and solid hazardous waste. And it also moves the jurisdiction over appeals of environmental permits from the boards to the Department of Environmental Quality itself. We believe that the changes actually enhance the ability of the boards to take public input. They retain their rulemaking authority. They're the ones who set the rules for the permits. They're the ones who direct how the divisions will operate. They are still appointed by the governor. They explicitly provide for representatives of environmental groups, public health professionals, also representatives of local government, and representatives of the industries that are affected. So that's basically what it does. Those two things. Number one, it streamlines a little bit the board's size to make them more manageable, and number two, it moves the permitting authority from the boards to the Department of Environmental Quality.
We do have a caller. We'll ask your caller to hold on. I just wanted to get a preliminary question in with Tom Bingham from Utah Manufacturers Association. From your point of view, why was this legislation needed?
Well, it's interesting to know that the way all of this began was that we at the Utah Manufacturers Association, in concert with some lean experts, lean manufacturing is a principle of continuous improvement that's been used in manufacturing for a long time. We started a process with the Department of Environmental Quality to help them gain some efficiencies like our private industries are gaining. And as we went through this, it occurred to me that we really ought to apply those principles not only to the divisions who are operating there, but also to the board structure to see if we can find a more efficient board operation that will still continue to maintain the quality that we need and the outcome that we need. So that was really how it began. There had been a history of folks saying, well, we want one more representative on this board from our perspective, and another said, well, then we want one more from ours, and that they've kind of outgrown the size that was intended. So we thought, why not apply these principles and see if we can find something that has a basis for efficiency like the divisions under Amanda Smith are gaining now. So we brought this to the legislature, and we believe that it has that potential, the potential of making things more efficient and still get the job done of protecting the environment and issuing the permits that are necessary for industry.
If you just joined us, we're talking about Senate Bill 21. This is sponsored by Senator Margaret Dayton. I believe the House sponsor will be Representative Wright. It now moves to the House. It's passed the Senate. This would overhaul state boards that oversee clean air, water, and radioactive waste. In the first part of the program, we heard from opponents of the bill. Now we're hearing from proponents, and they are Tom Bingham, Utah Manufacturing Association president, and Jim Holtkamp from the Utah Mining Association on the board. We bring in a caller next, and this is Mark in Park City. Mark, go ahead with your question or comment.
Hi, good morning. Just traveling along the southern clean air route in southern Utah, and it's quite beautiful. Thinking about all those smog days that we get, and I travel down to Salt Lake every day, and some are awe-inspiring as you come down the mountain. The question I had for you is, when you first broached the subject, you've mentioned a couple of times that there are jobs on the manufacturing side, and I just wanted to make a clear point that they do not represent the workers of these companies. People that you've got there actually represent the management and the owners, the stockholders, what have you, those companies. And I don't believe that they're being genuine in this. I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Mark, for calling. Mark called 1-800-826-1495. You can as well. We have another 10 minutes or so in the program. 1-800-826-1495. I wonder if either one of you gentlemen would like to address that, to the first point that the workers are not necessarily being represented in this.
Well, Camp, let me just address that. Under both Senate Bill 21 and under the prior law, the statute required that the governor appoint people who represented certain interests in the state, as I said, local government, the regulated community. But the SB 21 includes specifically, number one, a seat for an environmental or public interest representative, number two, public health professional, number three, people who have specific knowledge and experience. Now, there is no seat, quote-unquote, for workers, if you will, and I'm not sure exactly how that would work, except that workers as part of the community, as part of the public, do have, through the environmental group and also through these other professionals who explicitly are not to be associated with industry, and they have a seat on the board.
Mm. Mr. Bingham, I don't know if you have a comment on Mark's comments.
Well, to suggest that the associations we represent don't represent the individuals really ignores the fact that it is business and industry that provides the jobs that allows these people to be able to do the things that they do. And we've been very, very sensitive to not doing something that is going to impair the environment, be it air, water, whatever, because we live and work here too. We just think this is going to be a more efficient process, that we can do it and make sure that those people who are addressing these very, very technical issues have the expertise to make a decision based on sound science, not just on passion and emotion.
Let me have each of you comment on a comment we received on our website in conjunction with this program. This is from SLC. That's how they identify themselves. And this gets to perception. This is what SLC says. Senate Bill 21 makes Utah and the mining industry look ridiculous. This endless war our legislature fosters between industry and environment is so last century. We can have both in this state, but not by throwing out the checks and balances. Forward-thinking businesses of today are glad to work with environmental groups to show public just how green they can be. We all need good jobs, and we all need healthy air and water and soil. This bill just makes industry and government look very, very suspicious and sneaky. I want to maybe start with Mr. Bingham on this. Your reaction to that comment?
I guess I'm at a loss to see how this bill makes anybody look sneaky or suspicious. It simply is trying to do a better job with less and still protect the environment. The improvements that have come, particularly in air quality in Salt Lake, the Salt Lake Valley and along the Wasatch Front, have almost totally come from business and industry. That's not where these smoggy days come from. We got a lot of automobiles on the roads, and we believe we're certainly doing our part. And, you know, we have to have business and industry to keep our economy going. He admitted, apparently, that good jobs are important, and that's where the good-paying jobs are in manufacturing and mining. We need those two industries. I'm at a loss to figure out what he means by making us look ridiculous by suggesting that there ought to be some improvements in how we do business.
Mr. Holkamp, any reaction?
Yes, and I might just point out that the 2-year process, including stakeholder involvement, including consultation with environmental groups that led to this bill, we drew on a lot of the experience and process that other states and the federal government use in dealing with these issues. It's unfortunate that this perception is out there, but I disagree 100% that this somehow diminishes the scope of environmental protection in the state of Utah. In fact, I think it will enhance it because it frees the boards from inherent conflicts of interest when dealing with permit appeals and will allow for even more robust public input and robust discussion. And as I reiterate, the boards still retain the authority to set the regulations and the policies. That is not being taken away. Number two, the makeup of the boards, there are now 9 on each board. There used to be 11 to 14. They still retain the environmental seat. They still retain other public seats. So I think it's unfortunate this perception is out there, and I think what's going to have to happen is to watch this process as it goes forward and see the results, which I think will be positive.
We do have another caller. Charles and Logan, thanks for calling. Go ahead with your question or comment.
If the purpose of SB 21 is not to weaken environmental protection, just how specifically does it benefit the Utah Mining Association and the Utah Manufacturing Association?
Okay, thanks, Charles, for that. We'll have our maybe start with Mr. Holtkamp on this one.
Sure. Well, the benefit is a bit of a loaded word here, but as Tom indicated, this is the end result of a long process because DEQ does not have the funding that it used to have and is trying to do more with, frankly, less. So number one, the more efficient that DEQ is, and that's not a code word for just granting permits willy-nilly. That means the more they're able to do their work more efficiently, the better off industry is, because as we apply for permits, as we get inspected, as we try to comply, it just means there are not as many backlogs. We're able to have better results for everybody in this process. So I think the benefit of this efficiency is that everybody wins, the public, the industry, the government, because things get done. And if a permit is ill-advised or an appeal of a permit is made, this actually makes that appeal more efficient in the sense that the facts are considered more carefully, and if there's flaws, then those flaws are identified early in the process and the permit can be rejected or amended.
Mr. Bingham.
I would just add to that in some cases we've had, because of the lack of ability of the DEQ in manpower, not in their innate ability, but in manpower to address these permits, we've had some that have taken upwards of 2 years to get approved. That's not good for industry. If we're going to maintain jobs, if we have to have a permit to operate and it takes too long to get those, then we're out of business. And we can't provide the jobs that are necessary. This will be a much more effective way of doing this, and I believe will cause no reduction in quality of these permits.
Let me just ask a general question on air quality. Start with Mr. Bingham on this one. Of course, everyone is concerned about air quality and quality of water and other environmental factors. Will this, in your view, Senate Bill 21, harm air quality?
No, I don't think so. Quite to the contrary, I think it's going to help with air quality. Air quality in Salt Lake Valley in particular is better now than it was a decade or two decades ago. And it's largely because industry has done their part in cleaning that up. And I think this will cause that those permits that are applied for will be much more rigorous than they've been in the past because the DEQ has the ability to review those and the opportunity for the environmental community, who seem to be the objectors to this, will have that opportunity to engage in those permits and that process much earlier in the process, not after everything is complete and then react to it, but engage right up front. That's one of the efficiencies that's being gained at the Division of our Department of Environmental Quality.
Mr. Holtkamp, I want to ask you specifically about Kennecott. This is when I ask environmental groups about just air quality in general, they will almost inevitably bring up with me Kennecott. I wonder if you can defend that, reassure people about Kennecott and air quality.
Sure. And with the caveat that that my involvement with the Kennecott expansion project has not been all that great. So a lot of what I'm going to tell you is, frankly, what I've read in the newspapers. But Kennecott has gone through the process. It has obtained permits and approvals, and now those are being contested in a variety of forums. And fortunately, we have a venue where if folks have issues, they can raise them. They can be decided by a third party. In this case, it will be not only DEQ, but frankly, the courts. And those issues will be addressed. I personally do not believe that the Kennecott expansion and what I have seen from the applications and the permits is going to be a net detriment to air quality in this valley. Obviously, there are people that strongly disagree with that, but based on what I have reviewed the application that Kennecott submitted, I've seen the permits. The things Kennecott will be doing as they expand actually will enhance environmental protection in this valley. But as I said, there are obviously those that disagree with that. Mm. But I don't think Senate Bill 21 is going to facilitate the Kennecott permits in any way. They still are subject to appeal. The rights of the third parties or the public to appeal are not affected by this bill, and they'll still have the same rights they had before.
We'll leave it there. We're out of time, but I'm sure we'll be hearing much more on this. This will be going to the House. It's passed the Senate, and Representative Wright, I believe, will be carrying this in the House.
Yeah, Tom, actually, yes. It has passed the House as well.
Oh, it's passed the House now. Okay.
Yeah, it's passed the House and back to the Senate. There's a technical amendment that needs to be made, but it's virtually finish the process.
Okay, so this will now go to the governor soon, I would imagine. So we'll be
we'll be
looking at this probably as a fait accompli. We appreciate representatives from the Utah Mining Association, attorneys on their board, Jim Holtkamp. Thank you so much to you for being on the program, and
my pleasure.
For the president of Utah Manufacturers Association, Tom Bingham. Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, we're going to look at John F. Kennedy's first year in office. And our guest tomorrow has written a book on that first year. Very eventful year, the Berlin Wall and the standoff at Checkpoint Charlie. Lessons for today. That's tomorrow in the program. Thanks for listening.
The Utah Legislature comes from the USU Charter Credit Union, with 5 drive-up locations from Smithfield to Brigham City for members to save time and hassle, banking to go. Information is at usuccu.org. Support for Utah Public Radio comes from the Cache Valley Center for the Arts, presenting Flamenco Vivo, Carlotta Santana, an evening of Spanish dance with solos, duets, and festive company dances, February 21st and 22nd at 7:30. Ticket information is at centerforthearts.us.